And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our dramatic program today, The Mark of Cain, was written by Morton Wishengrad and is the seventh in a series of recreations of 12 outstanding Eternal Light programs.
Is it?
Open the door.
Tell me who it is.
It's the police.
What do you want?
You know what I want, Mrs. Power. I've got a court order for your son. Now, will you open the door or do I have to break it down?
You can't have him.
Don't be foolish. The court order says that the boy goes to an institution. Now, open the door, Mrs. Power.
I said you can't have my son. The only way you can have him is when I'm dead.
All right. I'm going to break the door down.
Go ahead, officer. I'll be on the fire escape.
What do you mean?
You break down the door and I jump. I said the only way you get my son is when I'm dead. That's what I mean. Every word.
The year was 1910. The place was a poverty-stricken tenement building in New York City. In 1910, a policeman blew a whistle. A hand pulled the signal of a firebox. The fire trucks and the police riot cars responded.
Come on! Spread those nets! Get them over, and I want those life nets spread!
Cassidy! Anderson! Kaplan!
Yes, sir!
Cover the roof, the backyard, and the areaway!
Yes, sir!
Costello, get those people back! Get them out of the way!
The sound of a mob, the brute, mindless sound of the morbidly curious who are attracted always by the pain and the shame of the despairing.
Hurry with those life nets! Now, come on! Get them over on, man! Spread those nets!
Sergeant, suppose she jumps at an angle. She'll smash herself against the pavement.
Who let you through? Hey, Costello, I told you to hold the people back.
No, no, get back, lady. You don't belong here.
My name is Loeb.
I wouldn't care if it was William Howard Taft. Back to the police line.
I'm a reporter from the New York Evening World. The name is Sophie Irene Loeb.
Drop in when I'm not busy. Now beat it, Miss Loeb.
Sergeant, if that woman kills herself, there's a good chance you won't be sleeping well tonight.
Oh, what do you want?
Maybe I can persuade her not to jump.
She's gone crazy. You'll be wasting your time.
It's only my time. It's her life. Sergeant, let me try to talk to her.
I tell you, she's hysterical. She won't listen.
But what do you lose if I try?
Miss Loeb, she might hurt you.
I'll try not to let her. Sergeant.
Sergeant, give me a chance.
Cassidy! Yes, sir. Take Miss Loeb
to the roof. Show her the way to the fire escape.
Oh, thank you, Sergeant. Come on, Cassidy.
In 1910, Sophie Irene Loeb found one hysterical human life to save. This is how you try to save a human life. The heart pounding, the chest bursting for air, the breath torn from the throat. She raced up the filthy tenement stairs to the roof.
This way!
She paused only for a moment to suck her breath back.
Now, you take it easy, lady. From here on, you're on your own.
Don't come any nearer. You take one more step, and I jump. Mrs. Peller, I'm your friend. I haven't any friends. I said don't come nearer. So help me, God, don't come near us.
All right, Mrs. Peller. I'll stay here. Please. I'm not from the police. I want to help you.
Nobody takes my boy.
I don't know anything about that, Mrs. Peller. I don't even know what the boy's done.
He didn't go to school. He should have gone to school, and he didn't go.
Peller, you're not in any condition to talk. Where's your husband?
Dead. That's where. Dead and buried.
Why didn't your boy go to school?
Because I have to work. There's no one to watch him, and he gets wild. Is that a reason to take him from his own mother? Is that a reason to send him to an orphan asylum? I'm his mother. His own mother. Who do they think they are? What kind of a city is this? What kind of laws do they make?
You're right about the law. Oh, stop crying, Mrs. Peller.
You're not saying that because...
No. No, they're trying to do a terrible thing to you, Mrs. Peller. If that's the law, it's a wicked law.
If you're playing with me, if this is a trick...
It's not a trick, Mrs. Peller. My mother is a widow. My brothers and sisters, I myself, were brought up by a widow. I think I know what's in your heart.
Well, what do you want?
Don't jump. That's no answer to anything.
But they'll take my boy.
Probably.
And they'll send him to an orphan asylum.
Probably.
Then what's the good?
You'll be alive. You'll both be alive. You'll have a chance to get him back.
Not a chance in the world. I know them. They never give you a chance.
I'll help you.
What for? Who am I to you?
Another woman. Mrs. Peller, I'm going to walk down this fire escape ladder.
Here, you fool. Here,
take my hand. What for, Mrs. Peller? Who am I to you?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Oh, lady. Lady, I don't know who you are, but whoever you are, don't let them take my boy. Don't let them.
In 1910, a woman did not leap to her death. And a young boy was taken from his mother and placed in an orphan asylum. It was the law. It was something Sophie Irene Loeb could not prevent. But there is something in an evil law that challenges every free spirit. There is something in social injustice that outrages every free soul and personally affronts every righteous being. And this is our social guilt, the guilt that every honest man and woman carries on his conscience. And this is also the tragedy of every man, to see injustice and to be powerless against it. In 1910, it was the tragedy of Sophie Irene Loeb and of a visitor in a New York orphan asylum.
Mrs. Peller, I've been waiting for you.
You didn't have to. I got nothing to say to you.
There's a little room here. We could sit down and talk.
What do you want?
To talk to you.
So you can write some more in your newspaper?
Yes.
Well, you better go and write about somebody else.
I've been waiting here for 2 hours.
You got what you wanted from me. Now let me alone.
Won't you talk to me?
No.
Do you think that all you are to me is a story for a newspaper?
Yes.
That isn't true, Mrs. Peller.
Look, I'm not educated, but I'm not a baby. If it would have made a bigger story, you would have let me jump. All right, I didn't jump. So now they took my boy. Now you go away before I say something bad to you.
I was not on an assignment when I passed by your house. I was not a newspaper reporter. I was just a woman passing your house who had to stop.
You took my trouble and you made yourself big with it. Did the newspaper give you a raise?
Please, go with me into that room.
What for?
We can sit down.
Why should I make it easy for you? How many kids have you got in an orphan asylum that I should make it easy for you? You got what you wanted. Now leave me alone.
How is your boy? They wouldn't let me see him.
You tried to see him?
Yes.
To take his picture.
To say hello. To put my arm around him.
Oh.
Oh. I'm so tired. We can sit in that room. Will you? I'm awfully tired. Have you eaten today? I had a cup of tea and a piece of bread. They say a boy needs his mother. But a mother needs her boy. I ain't human without him.
They'll treat him well.
I saw. They give him more to eat than I can give him. And he's got two blankets on his bed. And new shoes.
You mustn't cry. They treat the children as well as they can.
But he don't look good. In 1 week he got so skinny. And he's all dressed up in a uniform. Black shoes, black stockings, black pants, black sweater. All the little orphan children dressed in black like they was all going to their own funeral. Good food and new shoes ain't a home. A kid don't belong in an asylum.
Tell me all about it. Let me write it down in my paper. Let me tell the people that children do badly in an institution. That they must not be separated from their mothers. That mothers like you must be given a system. Help me, Mrs. Peller. Help your boy. Why are you crying? He's my trouble, not yours.
Miss Loeb, Miss Loeb. A man marries, his wife has a baby, and the man dies. It's such a bad thing for a child. And it's a bad thing to be poor. It's so bad, Miss Loeb. I can't tell you.
Shut the door, Miss Loeb. Sit down. I want to talk to you.
I'm going to be scolded.
That's right.
Mr. Tennant, has my stuff been that bad?
No, your stories have been good.
Then what's the matter?
I've been editor of this paper for a long time. I've known a lot of reporters. Some people can write about anything. Murder, suicide, violent death just rolls off their back. They digest their dinners, they sleep well.
It must be wonderful to be like that.
But you're not like that. And that makes you unlucky.
I know. I see Mrs. Peller in my dreams.
Forget her. That's good advice.
I can't. I've got to help
her. No, you don't. You don't have to help anybody but Sophie Lowe.
I've still got to help her.
It'll never stop. There are 1,000 Mrs. Pellers.
I just want to help
her. Oh, now don't kid yourself. You want to help them all. It's a matter of glands. You've got the wrong glands.
When I was a girl in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, my mother used to say, Sophie, your blood is no redder than anybody else's.
Your mother had the wrong glands. She should have given you the kind of glands that let you mind your own business.
Right now, Mrs. Peller's my business.
And how about the 1,000 other Mrs. Pellers? Now, watch out. You'll burst your cocoon. You won't be a butterfly. You'll be a professional do-gooder. A busybody with straight hair and no sense of humor.
Now, I'll take a chance.
What's come over you all of a sudden?
My mother.
Come on, come on. Say it so even I can understand.
Okay. Say it, you'd laugh at me. You couldn't put it into words. It's the way she used to light the candles on Friday night. Does that make any sense to you?
Not even a nickel's worth.
My mother could have been Mrs. Peller. She could have been the one to stand on a fire escape.
Sure, and your mother could have been Mrs. Van Aster, and you could have been buying your diamonds by the pound.
Oh, Mr. Tennant, I've got to help Mrs. Peller.
You won't change your mind.
It's not a matter of mind.
What are you going to do?
First, I'm going to talk to some of the other women, the widows like Mrs. Peller. Then I'm going to try to do whatever can be done for them.
I'm sort of wondering.
Yes, Mr. Tennant.
How does it go? The Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, thy brother? Sophie, the whole world is marked with a sign of Cain. Can you cleanse the whole world?
No, boss. I'm not trying to fix the world. I just want to help one woman, a widow called Mrs. Peller.
You're an ignorant fool, Sophie Loeb. You're talking about the whole world. ¶¶
despair, a new hope was born. In 1910, there were many who were despairing. And for at least some of them, Sophie Irene Lowe was a new hope. She accomplished no miracles. She was merely one woman speaking to other women, visiting orphan asylums, studying them, talking to widowed mothers, writing, calling meetings, talking to whoever would listen.
And we see this everywhere. Homes are broken up every day. Sisters and brothers are separated. It isn't enough to use taxpayers' money to build roads and highways. You have to build the children who are going to walk on the highways.
Mr. Superintendent, this orphanage raises misfits. Children just can't grow in an institution.
Madam, what are you trying to do? Abolish orphan asylums?
That is an idea, sir, isn't it? Tell Assemblyman that Sophie Irene Loeb is waiting.
And your business, madam?
I want Assemblyman McHugh to introduce a bill for widows' pensions.
Sophie Loeb, quit it. The world is permanently congealed. It can't be changed.
You're wrong, Mr. Tennant. Look in your copybook under Socrates. Nothing is permanent but change.
Don't bother introducing us, Miss Loeb. I know Assemblyman McHugh.
My friends call me Marty.
Have a cigar, Marty.
Ah, don't use the stuff, thanks. I used to be a prize fighter. I found smoking cut my wind.
Mr. Tennant, Assemblyman McHugh is going to...
Call me Marty.
Marty. Doesn't sound very dignified for an assemblyman.
There isn't anything dignified about an assemblyman.
Marty is going to introduce our bill.
But don't expect any miracles. It's practically a whole career to see a bill through. It has to get three readings in the state senate alone. One reading every year.
The paper will support you, Marty.
I think I'll need it.
And I'll support you with facts and affidavits. I can prove that apart from being better, it's cheaper to keep Mrs. Peller's boy at home than it is to raise him in an orphanage.
I'd like to see those figures.
Well, I'll ask Hannah Epstein to send them to you. Mm. She's one of my co-workers. She'll give you all the facts you need.
Well, it looks like a fight.
Well, that isn't all, Marty. That's a beginning. When the widow's pension bill goes through, we'll see what we can do about foster homes for children born out of wedlock.
Sophie, one thing at a time.
No, Mr. Tennant, but there's a lot to do.
Private philanthropic agencies may oppose you on this now.
That's right. In a way, you're taking away their business.
But it's everybody's business, because I'm talking about every man's child.
Miss Loeb, I'm standing in your corner. Every man's child. That's it. And what they need and what we've got to give them isn't charity. It's a chance.
Sophie Irene Loeb wasn't alone. She was joined by men like Marty McHugh, by women like Hannah Epstein, by the prayers of thousands of widows. It was a fight for the dignity of human life. Through 1910 and 1911 and 1912, the fight continued to abolish orphan asylums, to provide pensions for widows and allowances for their dependents, to prevent the child of poverty from being regarded as a pauper. And it was Sophie Irene Loeb who forced attention on the plight of the child born out of wedlock.
I am every man's child. I did not ask to come, but I am here. I arrived on this earth like every other child. I have been sent from pillar to post. I have been in many places. I am able-bodied and healthy. If I have the right to be born, I have other rights. I have the right to play. I have the right to have clothes like other children. I have the right to the loving care of people who are interested in me. But I am the ward of the state, of society. I am put in a home of 1,000 children, but not in the home of one. I am the child of an institution. When I am 16, society will have finished with me. It will send me forth handicapped with the sign of the asylum.
shall all who are born like me suffer the sorrows of no man's child.
With every despair, a new hope is born. Sophie Irene Loeb was a hope for the despairing, for those born into a society stained with the mark of Cain. Behind her, the great state of New York swung into action. She had many allies. There was the governor of the state of New York.
Sophie Irene Loeb, I appoint you to the State Commission of 15 to investigate conditions in European countries to the end that we may learn the best way.
There was Assemblyman McHugh, former prizefighter.
Mr. Speaker, I introduce a measure for relief of widows and their dependent children. Said measure to be known as the Widow's Pension Bill.
And finally, in her there was an inner voice that spoke.
Deliver the poor that cry out, the fatherless also, that hath none to help him.
It was an irresistible tide. In 1914, the legislature passed a widow's pension bill. On the same day, the governor signed it, and the bill became law.
Congratulations, Miss Loeb.
Thank you, Governor.
I am also congratulating you as the head of our party in New York State.
What do you mean, Governor?
Miss Loeb, you've got a name, and you've won it the hard way. Now, in November, that name on our ticket can be an asset to my party.
You want me to run for office?
Here's a list of 5 elective offices. Take your pick, and you are the official party candidate as of now.
Thank you, Governor.
Which one? Just take your pick.
None.
All right, I can understand your point of view. If it's something better you want, just let me talk to the party leaders. I think we can add to this list.
No, Governor, I don't want to run for any office.
Why not?
You wouldn't understand, sir.
Try me.
There's a woman called Mrs. Peller.
What about her?
Well, there are thousands like her. Next month or 2 months from now, whenever the new county welfare board will reach her name, she's going to go to an orphan asylum and get her boy back.
I'm afraid I don't understand you.
It's simple, Governor. She's going to get her boy because of this new law. She'll have a little money. She'll be able to look after him. And then perhaps I'll come to see them. And I'll bring a geranium for the fire escape.
Yes?
Don't you see, Governor? I want to come as just plain Sophie Loeb. I want her to say hello to me. As me, not as an official. I guess what I'm trying to say, Governor, is that I don't want Mrs. Peller to think that I did it for pay.
In 1914, high up in a New York tenement, a geranium rested on a fire escape. And during the years of the First War and the decade that followed, Sophie Irene Loeb continued her work. The things she did not do alone, but with hundreds of men and women like her. And when she died in 1929, it was possible for them to say, she delivered the poor that cried, the fatherless also that had none to help him. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon her. And she caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. She put on righteousness, and it clothed itself with her. She lived in a world that is stained with the mark of Cain. And perhaps because of her and the men and the women like her, there is a hope that one day the stain will be removed.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now, we take great pleasure in presenting Mrs. Catherine Brownell Ettinger, Chief of the United States Children's Bureau of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and former Dean of the School of Social Works of Boston University. Mrs. Ettinger.
I regard it as a privilege to speak to you after the moving story we've just heard of Sophie Irene Loeb. The Children's Bureau was founded in 1912 under the premise that home life is the highest and finest product of civilization, the great molding force of mind and character, and that children should not be deprived of it except for urgent and compelling reasons. Or just as Mrs. Peller in the drama you have heard put it, a kid don't belong in an asylum. We want to see every child in his own home, and although we cannot expect to completely fulfill that ideal, we are glad with what we have seen happen over the years to strengthen family life. The widow's pension idea has developed into a more adequate program of aid to families with dependent children. We've seen the doors of institutions open outward with a heartening development in foster family care. We in the Children's Bureau have sensed a large measure of success in emphasizing good adoption practices, which assure the children and both the natural and adoptive parents of the best in medical, social, legal care throughout this seriously responsible adoption process. Recently, at the signs of an apparent decrease in the number of adoptive applicants in proportion to the number of children available for adoption, we've been busy trying to find out why this is happening and, more importantly, the solution to the situation. Progress has not been the result of merely watching things happen. In forecasting needs, for example, we know that the working mother is here to stay. And with that in mind, we are especially enthusiastic about the new expansion of daycare services expected to begin in 1963 as a result of last year's public welfare amendments. We are realizing also that we must go further ahead in our concern for the future of the unmarried mother and her child, whom Sophie Irene Loeb first called every man's child.
There's much that still needs doing, and I think that our thanks must go to Miss Loeb and others like her, not only for what they actually did, but also for the sensitivity that they have communicated to all the rest of us.
Thank you, Mrs. Ettinger. Our Eternal Light drama today, The Mark of Cain, was written by Morton Wishengrad and was the seventh in a series of recreations of 12 outstanding Eternal Light programs. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the role of Sophie Irene Loeb was Marion Seldes. Also in the cast were Maurice Tarplin, James Dukas, John Thomas, Sam Gray, Bernard Grant, Ralph Bell, Marty Myers, and Beatrice Pons as Mrs. Peller.
Norman Rose was the narrator. Be with us next week when The Eternal Light presents Try Not to Love Such a Country by Sylvia Berger. This is Bill McCord. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.